Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Welcome to episode 7 of Discovered Wordsmiths. I appreciate you taking the time to listen, and I hope you've been finding something interesting and finding some new authors to go read about, find out more about, discovering some new wordsmiths that are out there. I wanted to make a note on this particular episode. I am talking with Michelle T. Berger about her novella, Renew You, and the internet was acting up a little bit. We had some issues with it, so you may hear some dropouts. You may hear some bad wording. It may sound funny, and I apologize for that. We did the best we could editing it. But I do hope you enjoy it. There's a lot to learn from Michelle. She is a professor that writes and helps other authors by coaching. So sit back, listen to what Michelle has to say about her journey to the published word. And I hope you enjoy this show and will subscribe and give us a review. It would really help a lot. Thanks. Here's Michelle.
So Michelle, tell us a little bit about yourself. Outside of being a writer, you mentioned you're a professor. Tell us about that and the rest of your life a little bit.
Yeah, so I will say that I am a speculative fiction writer. I write kind of across the speculative fiction universe, so sci-fi, modern fantasy, magical realism, but everything I write tends to have a horror edge or element to it. And I also am a creativity coach, and so I work with people to help them realize their dreams and remove obstacles to pursuing more of what they love to do in life. And I've been writing seriously for the last at least 10 years. Oh, wow. And then the 10 years before that, I was writing more like metaphorically in the basement. And like I was writing without community. And I would just rewrite parts of the novel that probably will never see the light of day, even though I've mined it, but I would just kind of rewrite that, and I would read craft books, and I would think to myself, well, you know, I'm really clever, and why can't I just figure this out? Well, I think if I hadn't met my writing teacher and mentor friend, Marjorie Hudson, about 10 years ago and kind of gotten into a literary community and done some other things, I probably would have given up, to be quite honest, because I think once you're in your late 30s, early 40s, and if you've had this desire to write and you haven't seen that fulfilled, it gets harder to do that because, you know, obviously of other kinds of life phase issues. So for people who are artistically inclined and they keep going, you know, usually by your 40s, you're starting to see the kind of payoff of that.
So you said you're a professor. What are you a professor of? What do you teach?
So I am at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. I'm in the Department of Women's and Gender Studies, and I do research primarily on gender and racial health disparities. And I also do work on issues around women and social movement. And right now, it's in the last couple of years, it's always a great time to be a women's and gender studies professor because we study power and inequality. But right now is a particularly important and interesting time.
I would say when classes resume in the fall, you probably have a lot of stuff to go over and cover.
Yes, indeed.
And you're coaching. You said you're a creativity coach. That's interesting. So do you coach people more than just writing, like musicians, or for their business to do speakers or things like that?
Absolutely. So my coaching practice is called the Creative Tickle. And usually when I say that, people smile and genius awake. And so I work with people who are creative professionals, but also people who want to be more creative. So I've worked with like city managers in terms of, you know, coming in and giving talks about a creative workplace, as well as people who are transitioning from one creative discipline into another. I deal a lot with issues around perfectionism and procrastination issues. So depending on, you know, what the person is coming to do a very targeted kind of assessment of where they are and work with them. Because, you know, creativity in and of itself is something we all desire, but it has ebbs and lows, and we have to kind of move through our life the different things that are going to keep us inspired. And as you know, because you're a writer, I typically work with a lot of writers, but not exclusively, the kinds of, you know, mental hoops and games that we put ourselves through can really aggravate what I call a lot of inner critics. And so, you know, sometimes we're dealing with that, as well as dealing with just how do I keep going? How do I sustain my momentum? How do I sustain my motivation to keep going?
So do you think being a coach with others helps you yourself as a writer?
Oh, such a great question. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I tell people, I mean, coaching is kind of the formal practice, and that implies, you know, level of professionalism, which is really important. But I tell people I'm a deep student of creativity, and I feel like I had to save my own life through creative means when I was a graduate student. I was pursuing my PhD in political science, and the academy, let's just say, really encourages a mind-body split. And prior to that, I always thought of myself as a creative person. I did a lot of creative writing in college. But at that time, my life was just really difficult. And I went on this deep search around the meaning of creativity. You know, creativity is a buzzword, but kind of going deeper into things and, you know, what we bring to our lives. And out of that really deep kind of search around creativity and seeing different forms of creativity, seeing what sustains people in their creative work, years then I developed a practice. So I always say I'm both a student and a practitioner. So everything that I have supported people on is something that I've had to learn or relearn myself.
I always heard and have experienced this, that to really know something, teach it to somebody. If you don't know it, you cannot teach it. And I learned that clear back in scout days. It was always boy led. So as you learn something, you'd turn around and teach it to somebody else. And it's amazing if you've never experienced it to say, well, here, do this. And then you're like, oh, now I get it. You really do learn a lot teaching.
Absolutely. And I would just add to that, that what a coach can give you is structure and accountability. And, you know, in my experience and looking at creative professionals, you know, over their careers, that's what most people need is structure. You know, whether it's you're going to write 3 times a day or you're going to submit stories once a month, and then accountability. So the coach follows up with you and says, okay, did you do that, what you said you were going to do this week or this or the past month? And if you didn't, what are the mental blocks that we need to work with to support you to get to that goal? So, and that's something that I had to learn and like deeply learn in terms of structure and accountability. Those are to me the kind of terms of, you know, being a successful creative professional.
I think that's great. And I know a lot of people need that type of help. It's amazing how creativity doesn't always come as inspirational and easy as people think. When it becomes a business and you're having to do it all the time, you realize it kind of becomes a chore sometimes. And to keep that spark alive, that can be difficult for anybody. So I think that's really cool how you're helping people with that aspect of things. So
thank you. Yeah, it's super fulfilling.
Michelle, so tell us a little bit about, I'm not even sure, you told me about your one book, so tell me about that, any other writing you've done, what do you have out?
Yeah, so I have recently released a novella called Renew You, and briefly, that's my books, and that basically asks the question of, what if a trip to the beauty salon could kill you? And it basically looks at, what if a mysterious virus was transmitted through this everyday hair care product? We follow one cat. She's a biracial young woman who comes back to New York City to pack up her deceased mother's things. She's a skier who lives in Aspen. And then we also follow Constancia, a 19-year-old young woman just about to start college who is very excited but kind of has a chip on her shoulder. She happens to be Puerto Rican. It's set in New York City in the 1990s. And basically, they band together with some other women to find out what this mysterious virus that is doing to people. So I tell people, if you like books that have female friendship, conspiracy theory, science, thrillery aspects, then you might like. So, and I'll add that the Renew You was originally published by Book Smugglers in 2017. So this is the life of a kind of person myself who works across micro and smaller prep. A wonderful venue. They're still around. They no longer do publishing. And some of my other work, my short stories, are through Book Smugglers, but they closed. And then I pitched. I'm really grateful that they picked it up. And I've written the other story that's on the Book Smugglers website is called Nucia, and that's about a young Black girl in the 1970s who alien through a diplomatic mission, and all she wants is a best friend, and the alien comes to stay with her and her family, and let's say that things don't go quite as the protagonist Lindsay had hopes for. E.T. meets Fatal Attraction.
I was going to say, it kind of sounds like an alien version of Harry and the Hendersons.
Well, yeah, that too, yeah. So, and then I have publications in some smaller journals scattered here and there. So, yeah, and some anthologies. And I will, one other final thing that I'm really proud of. I've never written a elliptic, modern kind of fantasy story, and I have a story called Cemetery Sisters that's coming out in an anthology called Concrete Dreams, Witches, Warriors, and Wise Women by Perspective, I think by the end of the month.
So you said you've used a couple small presses. Do you find that you prefer that, letting them handle the things with publishing, as opposed to doing publishing yourself?
Well, so I'm eager to become a hybrid author, and I'm trying to educate myself. I have so much, you know, talent and excitement about doing that. But for me, at least, I think because I have a little bit of again, we teach what we struggle with, a little bit of a perfectionist, and so, you know, there's a part of me that before I go into trying to do more indie publishing, I feel like I have to learn every single thing, which is obviously not true. So I'm hoping to dip my toe in the water. But I've been really pleased with my experience. They have, you know, these are obviously people who love books. I've had great editorial support and help and marketing publicity through them. So I think that the future, though, is about, if they can, to do, think of themselves more as hybrid. So if they're traditional, they can, you know, if they work on series, they can do other kinds of support, other kinds of stories for their audience. But if they're solely indie, you know, there's something to be said to work in a different kind of literary community than the indie community, even though there's a lot of overlap, and to kind of experience that kind of trajectory. So, or those two trajectories now tend to blend and cross over. So, I think that's a good thing, but I do meet a lot of people who are just traditionally published and they know nothing about the indie world. And I think that that's, you know, we need to use, as authors, we need to use all the resources and ways to reach our readers that we can.
And that's perfect, because I was just going to ask you, what you've been writing for a couple decades, you've mentioned. You've written a bunch of different things. What have you learned that you would go back and do differently? Or what's something that you did that you're now wishing you hadn't done?
Oh, that's such a great question. A couple of things. I wish I would have developed either the confidence to publish work on my own, because one of the things that I really admire about some indie writers is that they will put work out, and the work is can be very strong, but they learn in public. And when you walk a more traditionally published path, you are not encouraged to do that. But I think it would have been helpful to me to get real feedback for people a little bit earlier on. Like, you know, there's Wattpad and Medium and lots of places besides publishing on the bigger platform. So I wish I would have done that. And I think also, so there's sort of that confidence thing. And I think I wish I would have pushed myself to actually submit to learn how to do short stories and flash fiction earlier. So back up there for a moment. I really do mean that, you know, I worked for many years on a 400,000 word novel that the core of that was the novella. And I think it's important to believe in your work. And that was only after Mer Lafferty, who's this wonderful writer. And if your listeners don't know her podcast called I Should Be Writing, she's one of the earliest people podcasting and doing a writing podcast.
Yeah, I've listened to that one.
She's amazing. She happens to be a local writer and she's a UNC alum. And so I had emailed her five, 6 years ago and just asked her out to go, which is a great thing to do to get to meet writers. And she said, well, you know, where you at the time, novellas were harder to submit. I mean, now there's sort of this big renaissance and long form work. And, you know, you need to submit your work more. You need to start going to cons. And I think it's important to submit our work. And my writing teacher, Marjorie Hudson, always says, writers should think about apprenticing through their first 100 rejections. And when I first heard this, I thought, well, I've been writing for a long time, so I must have 100 rejections. So Stephen, I went actually back and I looked at and this is the paper rejections, and I looked through stuff and I thought, surely I have 100. Well, actually, even though I had been writing and trying to submit for many years, I didn't have that. I maybe had like 50 or something. But in my mind, I thought, oh, I've been rejected so much and I've been trying so hard. Well, actually, you really need to submit your work a lot sooner, a lot faster. And I'm particularly like short fiction. It's a great testing ground. You get to develop relationships with editors. Even if they don't accept your work, if they like it, they may say, send me your next thing. So I think it's important to, you know, if I had to do it again, I would have to submit work early and or try to write more in a public context to get that feedback.
Okay. So that's what you would have done in the past. You've learned from that. So what are your future plans now for books? What's coming out? What do you plan to do over the next 6 months, couple years?
So it's great. So thank you for that. Because I was just sitting down, you know, because we're at the halfway point. I'm not sure when this will air, but it's right now, it's early. It's almost mid-June. So this is always a good time to, you know, look ahead for the year. So I had been focused on separating Renew You. I'd been focused on short fiction and, you know, I've done a lot of anthologies now. I feel very lucky and fortunate that people have asked me to now submit to anthologies. But I still would like to crack a pro market. I've been some pro markets, which is great in terms of science fiction, speculative fiction. And I've been published in some literary journals. So I would like to move in that direction. But the main thing is that, and this is something we originally had added about, I'm contracted to produce a horror novel this year for Falstaff Books, and it'll take place in the Great Dismal Swamp, at least the North Carolina end. And the Great Dismal Swamp, if you don't know about it, it's you know, parts of Virginia and North Carolina. And it has this amazing history. It was a stop on the Underground Railroad. People hung out there who were rebels, runaway slaves, escaped people who didn't want to be found. So that the swamp itself, besides having been this commercial enterprise for the U.S. for the late 1700s, early 1800s, is this amazing historical place. So my horror story is set there. So I'm working furiously on that, trying to do 1,000 words, roughly 700 to 1,000 words a day.
Wow. So when's that supposed to be out? When's that due?
Well, everything has gotten a little pushback because of everything that's going on in publishing right now. So my goal is to get it to John Harkness, who's the main publisher and main editor of Falstaff Books. I'd like to get it to him by the end of August, because the semester for me will be starting up again in early August. And who knows how that will look. So that's going to be kind of an experiment. So I'm working really hard to get a good draft of him by the end of August. And then ideally would come out the end of the year.
Great. So just in time for Christmas.
Yes, I like, I'm going to hold on to that. Yes.
There you go. Christmas presents for everybody.
To scare them.
Well, I got 1 year for Christmas. My mother used to always get me a box set of something every Christmas. And 1 year it was a box set of Stephen King. So I read three Stephen King novels at Christmas time.
Oh, amazing. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Lots of good books. Yeah. Okay, so Michelle, any other thoughts, words of advice, anything about the whole journey that you'd like to express to other aspiring authors?
Yeah, I'd like to underscore, I think, the point I was trying to make earlier is that one is to believe in your work. And, you know, we hear so often like, oh, everything's been done under the sun. Well, actually, to my knowledge, I'm one of the first people that's taken hair, beauty, and adornment issues and put them into a sci-fi context. And I think it comes out of my own personal interest in history and thinking about ways in which our everyday practices are so gender and racialized. Like hair is very gendered, and like everything hair is very racialized. So I would say, you know, believe. So I came up with this idea also because the idea for the novella is because there was a real product in the 1990s that was marketed through infomercials to people and to mostly women of color. And about a year or two later, it was a class action lawsuit against the company, and it, you know, people products for this hair product, and they weren't. And so I would just say, you know, believe in your
there we go
in storytelling and the things that make you unique. Yeah, and the things that make you unique, and you know, your obsessions, the things that you are obsessively interested in. I think you can love your, you know, through your craft, through those kinds of interests.
Great. Well, I appreciate that. And I look forward to reading your book. I hadn't gotten a hold of the Renew You story. I want to find it because, you know, I can't really relate to hair care products right now. But it does sound very interesting to
me. I always tell guys, thank you. I always tell guys, some guys, be careful because, you know, like different kind of hair products, we don't really know what's in them because they're not really regulated in the way that we think other products are regulated.
Right.
So careful of your dyes and your, you know, Rogaine or whatever. Like, yeah, just, right. You know, just watch that.
Right. All right. Well, great. Michelle, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I look forward to finding out more about your stories and what you do in the future.
Thank you. And can I just say, people who want to kind of find me and connect with me.
Yes. I'm sorry. I should have asked. Yes. Tell us where you're at.
No worries. It's Michelle, and I'm a 1L Michelle. So that's Michelle Berger, berger.wordpress.com. That's my blog called The Practice of Creativity. I have a lot of stuff there for writers. I'm on social media at Berger on Twitter and other places. So love to hear and support writers and other creative professionals as well as readers. So thank you.
Great. It was good talking to you, Michelle. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Great questions. I really appreciate it being here.
Great. I'll see you online too.
Yes.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.